Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Tuesday, Chuck Oliver Show. We're talking college football because it's what we do. Appreciate Dave Bartu coming on. We talk personnel movement, asset allocation, et cetera. It's what we do every Tuesday with him. Jacob Rudner's coming up. Swamp 247. UF had a scrimmage over the weekend, and so we will talk about UF and where they stand right now ahead of the 2024 season, where I kind of already know where this is going, and that's unfortunate. But I don't know what you do. There are a lot of things I know. I know that he's a good coach. I know that you have to get results at some point, and so far he hasn't. I know that a lot of this is based around Graham Mertz, and I had it, like, as far as any way out, that old phrase, there's only one way out, forward. There's only one way out for a program that is as deficient or has as many challenges. When I say deficient, I don't know if the secondary is deficient. I just know last year they didn't tackle well. So could they play better? Sure. And they have some young guys coming back, which is kind of neat. So that could happen. But there's no way out in the SEC in particular for a program that has as many potential challenges or questions or things we just don't know how that so many areas they need to improve. There's no way out other than QB. And the issue for Florida is Graham Mertz was a success last season. And it wasn't the way out. That's how weird and flipped this game is now. I talked about Spencer Rattler. You told me the season he was going to put up. I was like, ooh, what's ahead for the Gamecocks? What's ahead for him is losing a record. So even going into this season, Graham Mertz, I had put together my personal list of, and I just started with any name in the SEC, any quarterback, and I was like, start putting your 16 starting quarterbacks, best you know them, start putting them in order. And just start throwing a name up and compare it either above or below the name you just did. Or, you know, just like do it that way. Don't try to start at one and say them in order. It skews our perception a little bit. So I just started throwing one name up, and then I throw another name up. And I was like, all right, well, here's a third name. Where does he fit? Here's a fourth name. Where does he? Yeah, and just did it that way. My list kind of expanded out in both directions. I had Graham Mertz as the sixth best quarterback in the SEC. And I think it's a commentary on a couple of good things, at least a good reflection on maybe fan bases, maybe media, maybe observers, etc. Carson Beck, I've said, could win the Heisman. Carson Beck could be the first overall draft pick next year. Quinn Ewers right behind him and Jackson Dart. I'd asked Heath to do this with his quarterbacks. He had that same three. We flip-flopped the next two. I had Nico Cook. He had Cook Nico. And then we flip-flopped the next two as well. He had Jalen Milroe just ahead of Mertz, and I had Mertz first. And you think about Milroe, who I've said, this is the one thing I know about Milroe, about to be a lot of yards and a lot of points, because whenever Kalen DeBoer shows up, there's a lot of yards and a lot of points. Whether it was Fresno, who was the QB out there? Was that Hayner? Whether it was Fresno, UW, now it's Alabama, I fully expect. And Jalen Milroe, he might be the most physically able QB that DeBoer's had as a head coach. So at one point, he had Michael Penix before the injuries. But Milroe, man, sky's the limit. And I got Mertz just above him. And everything that I just said there about Jalen, about, man, Jalen Milroe, that's everything that took for Heath to drop Mertz one spot, but we had him right there together. Here's what I think about Gen Pop, and I hope I'm wrong. I think Graham Mertz, he was great last year. And the more you examine it, you know, there's sometimes, you look at some of the details and he kind of gets exposed. No. If you look at even game by game, you even look at some of the throws he made, and you don't even look at some of the context, then even the numbers, which are always just an indicator, when you start looking at the details with some guys, you see the relations and how they had to coach around them and that, well, there are numbers, but are there really plays? It's the opposite with Mertz. I think the more you did a drill down and the more you realized the uneven play, and that's probably the best way to describe this, the uneven play of that offensive line, whether it was the actual protection, whether it was stuff like penalties, like easy penalties, like pre-snap stuff, all of that. A running back core that, well, I'll say wasn't used properly. That's nothing. I mean, Florida fans, they're looking at Damian Pierce. I remember going into last season, they're like, why didn't we use him more? It's the same thing now. Trevor Etienne, guess what's going to happen in Jacksonville? You're going to have a bunch of Florida fans going, why didn't we use him more? So even the one area where you could do grown man work, you just didn't use him right. Against all that, with one receiver I really liked, and then a guy who kind of looks fun, and then some other inconsistent week-to-week sort of options or suspects somewhere in between there. Graham Mertz put up that kind of season? I don't think there's a proper awareness because, what did it lead to? And they had a losing record, and it's Florida, and they stink, and ha-ha, you stink. And maybe, I don't know, there's a fan who's still mad about something Spurrier did to him back in the day. Yeah, you came to Knoxville, and so I think it's funny now. And Spurrier's like, you ain't been in the program in years. So, for whatever reason, I don't think Graham Mertz, there's going to be that. I've got him as the sixth best in the SEC, and given what, right up against Brady Cook or Nico, depending on if it's my first five or Heath's, and then Graham Mertz, and he's got him right behind Milroe. Folks, top heavy, that doesn't really, it's top heavy, and then it gets kind of middle heavy in the SEC. So, I'm talking about his performance against the backdrop of what in Gainesville last year, against the backdrop of what could be some outstanding SEC quarterback play with multiple first-round picks in the 25 draft, much less further down the road with Nico or whomever else. Folks, Graham Mertz, his season was fabulous. And I think it's probably going to be kind of not forgotten, I think just not acknowledged, not muted. I don't think that there's much of an idea of the real advantage he is, because we think of our idea of what the program is right now, and they've got this five-star, and is he going to be the next Tebow? So where Mertz wound up on the list was one particular intrigue for me, and it was interesting to see that. On the other end of that was Peyton Thorne, who... Here's who I had Peyton. Now, I did this, maybe 3 weeks ago. So it was during spring practice for most programs. The other end of that was Peyton Thorne. That was the other guy that I was really interested in, because I had him. Here's what it took to finish below Peyton Thorne in my pre-spring, and that's kind of why I did this, in my pre-spring game SEC quarterback rankings. Here's what it took to be behind Peyton Thorne, lower than Peyton Thorne. You had to be a transfer from Baylor who had never played for the coach before, or you had to be a transfer from Utah to Vanderbilt. That's what it took, because everybody else I had ahead of Peyton Thorne. So Brock Vandergriff hadn't even played. I was like, well, he's at Kentucky and he's got fun receivers. I'm going to put him ahead of it. Lenore Sellers is at South Carolina and hasn't really played. And I don't know that he has fun receivers. He may. They put together, it was a freak show. If everybody was healthy, the one game where everybody was healthy, because I think it might have been one game, they had a freak show on the perimeter. It just didn't last, and it wasn't consistent. And Harbor never played, and Leggett kind of, he played, but Wells didn't. So you've got Lenore Sellers, who has never played, and I don't know that they have the freak show anymore, and I still have him two spots ahead of Peyton Thorne. Taven Green, I guess he has to be the starter at Arkansas, but he's the starter at Arkansas, and I've got him three spots. That's where Peyton Thorne was. I'm going to do this after the 20th, after everybody. It's not just the games that I want to evaluate. That's very little of it. It's the reactions and how the coaches used them and what they want out of them. That's what I'm going to evaluate after all the spring's done, and we'll see how this goes. And Peyton Thorne is certainly a riser, and I want to see what I think about Graham Mertz, which is going to be linked certainly to DJ Lagway. Heath, what's up?
Keeping an eye on one thing going on today, Chuck. FSU is in court today. They have their first hearing on their suit against the ACC. For those who don't remember, last week the ACC won a couple of different battles against FSU in the lawsuit in North Carolina, particularly that the judge in North Carolina says, yes, the case will be heard here, not in Florida. Meanwhile, they're hoping down there that a judge will say, no, the case will be heard here in Florida, not in North Carolina in advance, as opposed to dismissing and saying, yeah, you've already got a case up there. So that's all going on right now. But Warchant noting this, the judge at the trial asked about what FSU would need to pay to leave the ACC. And then asked about, okay, if FSU would pay $130 to $140 million, the ACC would keep the media rights, but would they negotiate the price on the media rights if they kept them? And the ACC's lawyer says, or we would sell the FSU media rights to somebody else, and they would receive portions of that just the same way they do now. So this is interesting. I don't think anybody realized that there's a chance that basically the ACC could be the ones to sell the media rights, to basically say, we'll do the deal, not you. That's an interesting angle here.
Well, it's grant of rights. We can do with your home games what we choose. And
FSU games coming to the Shopping Network in the near future.
Well, what have we seen that SEC? Their games can be kind of farmed out, not to Raycom, but I mean, that's what Raycom used to be. It's like, we're going to farm this out, and it's not a tier one game, it's a tier two game. It's not a tier two game, it's a tier three game. The new SEC deal has that in place for their games to be across a variety of networks, whether they're ABC, ESPN, or not, don't they?
Yeah, there's a different way, but normally it's sold just in a group package, not one school's right. So it'd be fascinating to see how this would go. Whether they would say, in effect, okay, Fox, you want them in the Big Ten, okay, then you'll pay us whatever to get them there. For what it's worth, the judge apparently has said he would like to rule on FSU's motions today, so we may get more news on this before the day's already done.
Well, fantastic for that. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll move ahead next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show, rolling along on Tuesday. We talk college football for 2 hours a day. Been doing it for about a decade. 9 states and 60 sticks. I appreciate the blessing. UF had another scrimmage, and they've got a ball game coming up, a spring game coming up. And there is an opportunity. I was waxing about Graham Mertz and the fact that, Florida, they weren't good, and Napier's going to get fired, and, you know, whatever, that we're all going to we already skipped past a really, really outstanding season from last year with Mertz, and we'll probably ignore whatever he does this year because, Florida stinks, and he's going to get fired. There's a chance Mertz is even better because that kid was under so much pressure last year. And so they went out and got some portal tackles, and maybe because of one of those guys coming in, one of the guard spots gets better because of a position change. So maybe, give Graham Mertz another second to throw the ball. Maybe he's even better. Maybe that's why, why didn't the freshman receivers all step up? Well, maybe the quarterback didn't have time. I don't know. It's so many layers to the onion. But they're getting after it. Want to welcome on right now from Swamp 247. It's Jacob Rudner. Jacob, welcome back, man. How you been?
I'm great, Chuck. How are you?
Doing good. I'm a big Graham Mertz fan. And I believe that he's underappreciated because we always equate it to, they weren't good. And so I was like, Graham Mertz is really good. Talk the big picture. Where he is right now, will the pass protection be better and the fans' fascination and insistence on seeing DJ Lagway?
Well, I think with Graham Mertz, Florida knew that it had over exceeded everybody's expectations. I think that this was a situation where, the general public was really down on Graham Mertz last year, and then he comes in and has what you just said, and I would agree, it was a spectacular season. And now Florida has put an emphasis on building on what it had accepted as the reality a long time ago, which is that Graham Mertz is a very capable operator within this offense. You can put a lot on his plate. He will digest a lot of information and use it to his advantage. And he is a mature quarterback. And so, I think this offseason, Florida is focusing on expanding, getting bigger, and making sure that it can be a little bit more effective in the downfield passing game, which we're starting to see. Protections are better. Graham Mertz has told us that he is more willing to take these bigger shots and try and capitalize on some of the playmakers that Florida has in its offense. And we've seen that so far this spring. And I think the spring game will be Florida's first opportunity to try and showcase that, if you will.
I'm very, very eager to see last year's freshman class of receivers. I've talked about this before. I talked about it in the moment in Nashville. Billy Napier talked about three different freshman receivers. Oh, yeah, you could see all of them. And we saw one. Talk about the returning kids, the youngins at wide receiver, and who may be showing out a little bit.
Well, it starts with Eugene Wilson, and I think everybody knows that at this point. This is a fast, multi-dimensional receiver who has a lot of talents and can do a lot of things. I foresee Eugene Wilson having an all-conference season and potentially even up into that All-American category, just based upon what we saw him do and with the workload that he was assigned as a true freshman last year. And he will headline Florida's offense. In terms of returning depth, though, Florida doesn't bring back a ton of experience with this team. It lost Ricky Pearsall, who was, huge for them last year. Jaquavion Frazier's is back in the fold, but he hasn't done a lot over the course of his career. The same can be said for Marcus Burke. Some young guys who redshirted last year, Andy Jean, a really solid downfield option. Aiden Mizell kind of falls into the same category. And the rest of the production in that room will have to come from newcomers. Chimera DK, a transfer from Wisconsin, Graham Mertz's former number one option, is now in Gainesville with Mertz. Florida's hoping that them reconnecting can bring a little bit more out of the senior wide receiver after he had roughly, 300 yards last year in Wisconsin's offense. And then there's freshman, DeRay Hawkins, super speedster, Tank Abrams. Tawaski Abrams is also a newcomer with a lot of speed. And so they're hoping that this blend of returning older talent that hasn't really shown a lot and several newcomers will pan out into a room that is a little more productive than it was a year ago.
So what happens against Miami is what matters. I mean, that's going to be in, 5 months from now. But last Saturday, I wasn't in Gainesville. What happened there? Because either the defense suddenly is full of fire breathers or they did not up their protection, at least during one scrimmage setting. I was listening to Napier talk about it, and it was a lot of couching it in phrases of, well, it didn't start the way we wanted, but it got better, and et cetera. Just talk about where that protection is, because if that doesn't work, then nothing's going to work.
So I think Florida's protections are better on the outside, which I think you would agree with as well. They did get longer. They brought in a couple guys who are experienced, Devin Manuel from Arkansas and Brandon Crenshaw-Dixon from San Diego State. And those guys have helped the situation. Florida also brought back a couple tackles, Austin Barber and Cameron Waits, who are trying to get healthy right now, but if they do, should be able to contribute. It's the interior of the line where I think the questions are. Damian George, who started at right tackle last year, is now starting at right guard, and that's been a learning curve this spring. I still think that he's acclimating to the position, trying to get his feet under him a little bit, and it hasn't always been smooth. Najee Harris is on the other side at left guard. He'll be a first-year full-time starter, and that's also not an easy position to be in when you're facing the hardest schedule maybe ever in the history of college football. And Jake Slaughter is starting at center, and we saw him play quite well last year, and so I think that could actually be a position of strength, but still hard to say when you have a guy who will be in his first real full-time starting job. Last year, Florida still did have Kingsley Eguikon, and so it's a line that needs to have a lot go right. I think it has performed reasonably well in practices, but as you mentioned, it hasn't been perfect, and Florida has still had its quarterbacks under pressure and causing turnovers. Part of that is also because Florida is asking its quarterbacks to be more aggressive. We just talked about the downfield passing game. Mertz is trying to expand his capabilities, and that is a byproduct. He is pushing things into areas he shouldn't, and he's still learning you know, how to have a better feel for those spots. And I will say, too, I do think Florida got better in the secondary. It brought in a lot of experience. It brought in a couple athletes. And some guys have gotten healthy. So, you know, I think it's all three things that contribute to that. But it is certainly something to keep an eye on as we go forward.
All right. I've been asking everybody about this. I can't get enough of Shamar James. I think he may be the best player on the team. Is he going to be 100% healthy? Where is he right now? Is he already 100%? Is he running around full contact? What's the status?
So he is not running around full contact. He's still dealing with that knee injury. Florida is taking a cautious approach to how it handles Shamar James this spring. No need to push it, essentially, is where they're at. And we will not see him in full contact, to my knowledge, in the spring game. Again, it just goes back to Florida being cautious. I do, however, think that he will have a full summer training camp and be available by the start of the season. So not an area of major concern. Florida knows what it has in Shamar James. He's a solid starting middle linebacker, very steady player. And it's just a matter of keeping him healthy and getting him to the starting line when the season starts in August.
And give me your opinion. You can tell me, nah, you're overstating it. When he's healthy and he's out there being like, he's an advantage. He gives Florida a chance. Like, he wins his matchup.
I would tend to agree. I think Florida thinks very highly of Shamar James. He is a very athletic player. He was a highly recruited kid who they had to battle, you know, even Alabama in his home state, in order to be able to get him, and they were successful. So Florida has put a lot of stock into Shamar James. They believe that he is somebody who can help elevate their defense, a Ventrell Miller type from 2 years ago, which was really important. And they're at a point now where they're going to need some of that leadership again. Last year was a bad year on defense. Shamar James experienced that to some degree. Then he got hurt, but he is now an elder statesman, a third-year player in Florida's defense, and they will rely on him, and probably wisely should, to step up into that role and really take over.
Had a blue check on Twitter before everybody else could pay for it, because he's legit. It's Jacob Rudner from 247. Jacob, thank you for your time, friend.
Talk to you soon.
All right, 247 Sports, CBS as well, on Twitter, at Jacob Rudner. So, yeah, Shamar, it was a dislocated knee, which I don't know. Something about that injury in particular, it just – because you see the shoulder sometimes, you see whatever, and just kind of hangs. And you know that it's not over. It has to be fixed. And so that was his injury against, I guess it was Georgia, yeah, last year in Jacksonville. And so he's back soon.
Now more.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. College football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Get out of mouth the South and just scatter some chicken feet on it. And that's kind of our, oh, we got an affiliate there. 60 of them all around the nine-state southern area. So we talk college football because that's what people want. Now, I'm going to start with one question about the draft for our next guest. But we're going to talk spring football because Tennessee's got a game coming up. They put in maybe 11 practices, I believe, and they've got a lot of talent to replace, but they may be at that spot where, you know, some of those guys are actually better and you improve. Well, you don't get better by losing so-and-so to the NFL. Well, maybe you do. Want to welcome on right now from Go Vols 247. It's Ryan Callahan. Ryan, welcome back, man. How you doing?
Hey, doing well. How are you?
Nothing but good. I want to ask you about Jalen Wright. And that's a draft thing because he's gone. I had somebody after the combine, whoo, I didn't know Jalen Wright was that fast. And I'm like, well, did you watch him? Because here's my like the big indicator. When you see the backside corner have to make the tackle on a running back kind of consistently on, I was like, he's beating pursuit. Give me your vision. What is Jalen Wright as an NFL running back? Because that position has sort of kind of had a resurgence over the last, say, 5 years in the league.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting year, too, because it doesn't seem like a particularly loaded running back class, and that's one of the reasons he's kind of gravitated toward the top of that list, I think, in recent months. You know, ran a good time and has attracted more interest, I think, as people have gone through and looked at his numbers. I mean, he was really good, good average per carry, just really efficient at Tennessee this past season. And, you know, he was an interesting prospect coming out of high school even, because I think there was always this potential there, but he's one of those guys that just didn't get a chance to put up big numbers. He never had a 1,000-yard season, I think, in high school. He had that COVID year that wiped out his senior season. So he was just sort of an unknown that I think always had this potential, and he's really lived up to it. And I think he's a really interesting player. I won't be surprised if he has a pretty nice NFL career, because I think he is still coming into his own and just got a chance to have the workload this past season that gave him a chance to put up the kind of numbers that we saw him have. So I'm kind of high on his ceiling and think he might surprise some people, but where he goes and exactly where he ends up in that running back pecking order in the draft is going to be interesting. But we're hearing a lot of talk of maybe second, third round for him, and that'd be a pretty nice spot, obviously, based on the you know, kind of where people thought he was going to be a couple of years ago.
Yeah, man, he's a threat to go house every single time. All right, let's talk about the spring game, I guess. And I don't know, Josh Heupel, when he structures a game, every coach can do it, you know, any way they want to. But this year, whatever the game is, it's only 10,000 folks. I've heard everything from, oh, yeah, it's just construction and limited capacity to, yeah, Heupel doesn't really want prying eyes anyway. Give me the lowdown. And is it 10,000? Is that the limited capacity?
Yes, it is. It is exactly 10,000, and it has been sold out for days. You know, I'm not sure how many fans even really were given access to them. I think they kind of started with, you know, high level donors and went from there, and so those got snapped up pretty quickly. And there's even a bit of a secondary market for them for anybody still looking to go for that one Saturday afternoon. So. And that's the unfortunate part of this is obviously there's a good bit of excitement about, you know, this is the year Nico Iamaleava gets to take over as a starting quarterback. And a lot of newcomers, you know, Mike Matthews, a five-star from there in Atlanta, yep. Some other good players that people are excited to see, new transfers. And not everybody's going to get a chance to see them in person, but it was kind of the best of a bunch of bad options they had. They dealt with this a couple of years ago, too. This is kind of a long-term project for Neyland Stadium, a lot of phases to it. And a couple of years ago had a I guess you could call it a spring game on their practice field. They just didn't allow the public in, had a spring game that they called it, and then players and their families and recruits got to be there, but there was nothing for the public that year. So this is better than that, and this is also better in their minds, I think, than having a neutral site spring game, which they looked into, maybe going to Nashville, Chattanooga, doing something there. That way you couldn't really host recruits because it's outside your campus. So this gives them a chance to have as normal of a spring game as possible. It's still going to be streamed where fans that can't make it there can watch it, but obviously not ideal to have 10,000 there instead of the usual, you know, 50 or 60,000.
Okay, so Nico, I'm assuming whatever he's doing, is there a red jersey on him? Does he actually have two guys out there in suits like the Secret Service, like protecting him? Because do not hit Nico. That's the first rule of spring practice, I have to assume, right?
Yeah, and I think they usually have had the quarterbacks in the gray alternate jerseys in the spring game to kind of differentiate them from the other players. But they will make it very clear this year, especially because for the second straight year, Tennessee's just at two scholarship quarterbacks. Yep. They're not just because Nico is kind of the key to the season, but because they really don't have depth at quarterback. They cannot afford an injury there. So even though Nico, a big part of his game is the mobility, the ability to extend plays with his feet, you don't want him to test that too much in this one. So they'll be whistling anything dead that comes close to him. And you'll probably even see quite a bit, I think, of Jake Merklinger, the true freshman, and also Gaston Moore, who might be the number two quarterback right now. If they were starting a game tomorrow, I think he would probably be the backup at this point. And so we'll see what those guys can do. But they're going to certainly protect Nico at all costs and try to at least showcase him a little bit, but at the same time, not take any chances whatsoever.
Not bubble wrapping oven mitts. All right, Brew McCoy, he's still coming back from surgery, right? Where is he? Is he where's his participation level?
Yeah, he's not doing anything this spring. It's going to be still a summer preseason camp kind of thing for him coming back and getting more of a full workload. So he's still kind of slowly working his way back from that injury that happened in the South Carolina game, I guess a little more than 6 months ago. Pretty gruesome injury, obviously, at the time, so not shocking that it's taken some time. But they are still pretty confident he'll be back okay around the start of the season, and that's a big deal to get a veteran like that back that they can count on. But in the meantime, it's given them a chance to get some new guys a lot of work this spring. They've got a little more depth at receiver this year than they had last year. Last year, a couple injuries that left them with Chaz Nimrod and Caleb Webb playing a lot of snaps at the end of the season. This year, you got Mike Matthews that I mentioned that's been pretty impressive in both scrimmages so far as a true freshman. Chris Brazel, the Tulane transfer, a lot of excitement about him. He's made some plays this spring. Also another freshman, Braylon Staley, that I think we'll get to see quite a bit of in the spring game and has a chance to contribute as a true freshman. So that gives them a chance to play those guys a little more. They know what they have in Brew, so giving them a chance to sort of work with some other guys and see what they have elsewhere. I think it's allowed them to develop some depth, and there's a chance Tennessee might play five or six receivers on a regular basis, which honestly is something we've not seen a lot from Josh Heupel the first few years.
Yeah, that's not his thing. It's here are my four receivers and get to the line and snap it. You mentioned Matthews, and he is a blazer, and you can tell he's a hoops player as well. He's got that go get it as a wide receiver. But it's funny because I heard Heupel mention him a couple of times, and I was like, all right, well, that's interesting. Whenever a head coach talks about a true freshman, that's something. I heard Dante Thornton talk about him. He's like, that kid can play. Tell me about Dante Thornton, because you mentioned there were a couple of guys who got injured. Dante Thornton was kind of one of them. His season never really got started in any consistent way last year. Where's he?
Yeah, he was honestly a disappointment for a lot of fans last year that, coming out of the transfer portal, they were pretty excited about him coming out of Oregon, thought he could be the starter in the slot, which was always kind of the interesting thing. He's 6'4", 6'5", and he's playing in the slot, right? So he played there most of the year, and then they get about halfway through the season, and right not long before he got hurt, he'd moved to the outside and started to show some flashes there. So he's been working outside this spring again. He's another one of those guys that is definitely in the mix for some playing time, kind of battling with Chris Brazel and some of those guys for an outside spot. So how that all shakes out over the next few months will be interesting, but I think he's going to be someone that will certainly be part of the rotation at the very least. But yeah, exactly what his role is and how much better he can be this year, definitely a big wild card for this offense. And obviously with Brew McCoy's situation, you never know. He might need to be counted on if Brew McCoy is a little slower coming off that injury than expected. So it's an important offseason for Dante Thornton. He needs to start living up to the billing because he was a big-time prospect coming out of high school, has some ability, but it just hasn't come together for him. I think they're optimistic this year will at least be a step in the right direction.
All right, other side of the ball, Boo Carter. Tell people maybe their first reference to Boo Carter. Tell them what may be on the horizon for Tennessee.
Yeah, he was a big deal for Tennessee in recruiting for a long time. So a lot of in-state fans certainly are very familiar with him. He was out of Chattanooga, moved to Bradley Central High School just outside Chattanooga for his senior season. But he was a big-time priority for Tennessee, and they beat out Michigan and some others to keep him in-state. They're really excited about him. I and some others thought for a while in his high school career he might be better on the offensive side of the ball. But he's not a big guy, and that's the one knock on him. He's probably in the 5'10 range, 5'10 and a half. But man, he's just a ball player. He's just one of those guys that can do anything you ask him to do. He could be a solid slot receiver, I have no doubt. But he's in the secondary for Tennessee, mostly playing the star position, but also will get continue to get some work at safety, I think, and could help on special teams too. He's a really good, especially punt returner in high school. So I think they're pretty excited about him. He has shown up in both scrimmages as well. He's got some competition for that star position. Jordan Matthews, a junior who's kind of waited his turn to play. So Thomas might be the starter there to open the season, but I think they're going to have a hard time keeping Boo Carter off the field in some capacity. So he's definitely one of those freshmen to watch this year and someone they're pretty excited about long term.
Okay, now the reason I asked you is because I asked another guy, this is off the air, I was like, hey, who's this Boo Carter guy people are talking about? And he started his response with, I'm not saying he's Eric Berry. I was like, stop talking. there are certain guys you just can't compare other players to, but everything you're talking about there, where are we going to play? And wow, he could play offense. Boy, he can catch a punt. It's a little bit of the Eric Berry profile.
Yeah, now I'm definitely going to pump the brakes on that comparison just a little bit, because I will say the question marks about Boo, and he was still a highly ranked guy because, again, you just, when you see him in person, you just can't not think he's a pretty electric guy. But the measurables are the big knock on him. He's not a tall guy, and he didn't have any verified 4.4 or 4.5 timing, so we don't know how much straight line speed he has, and the length is a little questionable. But he's just a good football player, so I think he's going to be – he's definitely going to be on the field in some capacity again, and I'll be surprised if he's not a starter, you know, pretty early in his career. He looks like a guy who's going to be out there at some point, probably at the star position, but potentially elsewhere too.
Yeah, and that's Willie Martinez that said, you know, folks, he just winds up around the ball. So we go back and watch tape of practice, and there he is again. So that's not nothing. Ryan, I appreciate you coming on, man. Thank you for your expertise every time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
247, that's where you get Ryan Callahan. So you just see when coaches mention guys, that'll get a little bit of attention. When you see some upperclassmen mention a freshman, just the freshman, because they don't know the freshman. They know somebody else who may be coming back. They don't know the freshman. And when you hear Boo Carter's name get mentioned, you're like, okay, well, I'm going to ask, say, it's like, who's this Boo Carter guy? It's like, look, I'm not saying he's Eric Berry. I was like, you can't stop. Like, the conversation's over. But that was the description, was like Eric Berry, you said this guy could play offense. He can play in the secondary. He can return punts. He's tough. He's physical enough. Now, Eric Berry was a guy that, honestly, I think, like, he was a Minka level. In fact, I think Eric Berry's even better. When you have a freshman show up and you're like, this guy could play like five or six positions and maybe a couple up are on the other side of the ball, it's just a generational sort of thing. And that's what it turned out to be with Eric Berry. And he played 3 years and then went off. And I think Kansas City made him like, I don't know, the 8th or 10th or 12th overall pick or something. And then, hey, look, Eric Berry's in the Pro Bowl. That's a whole different thing. After I got the description, I was like, yeah, okay, I can see what you're saying. But he's not Eric Berry. And I was like, well, that's what I led with. Well, pick somebody else to describe then, because that's off limits. Like, look, he's not Herschel Walker. Stop talking. All right, we will break. We'll wrap up next.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Creating an edge on the practice field, there's a lot of different ways to do that. Our physicality, our mentality, our toughness, our energy, our passion, our effort, everything that we're doing from that standpoint matters. But, man, when I'm not going, when I'm not in the rep, am I getting better? And so that strain is, to me, where there's a big chance to have great growth with our entire team right now.
Jim Levy from Mississippi State. And they've got their game coming up, I believe, on the 20th. They're wrapping it up that final day. Then almost everybody's done at that point. And you really need to be because the portal, it's going to be happening. There is this thought in investing that if you're ignoring the market, there's a pretty good chance the market's ignoring you. That's what's going on right now. And some folks got ambushed by this with the date of their spring game. Some folks, I mean, if you schedule a spring game and both the men's and women's team are in the Final Four that same weekend, buzzard's luck, especially if you don't have much heritage. Sometimes stuff happens. But the calendar got set, and then it got reset, and then it got reset again to where it wasn't May, what was it last year, the 1st through the 15th or so of May was the portal, and then this year, or no, actually, we're going 2 weeks earlier than that. Let's go 16th through the 30th, huh? So it's going to be a stampede, and in part, it's because of some of the new rules that basically now anybody can transfer to any school he chooses as many times as he chooses, and here's the key, for any reason he chooses. Straight cash payment? Well, then that's why I'm transferring to Washington State. Or wherever. This is what matters to me today, and that is brought to you by ThisStuffMatters.net. Full up day on the Duncan Newsmaker line. We had Dave Bartu on. Why? Because, well, it's a Tuesday, and bottom of hour one, we always have Dave Bartu on. He is CFB Matrix, and we talked about asset allocation and personnel movement, players, coaches, all of that in the college game and a little bit in the NFL and quarterbacks as well, because he does specialize in that. So Dave was on. Appreciate him. Duncan Newsmaker line in hour two. It was full. Our truest reporter for Florida from Swamp 247, Jacob Rudner, came on. Talked about Billy Napier and the Gators coming off their second scrimmage, and they've got their spring game coming up, and it's just it's such a difficult situation for them. Everybody wants to see some DJ Lagway, and they will, and I believe it will be successful. Here is the just giant red flags. If it's not successful, you can't look at it and go, well, it's a freshman, he's playing college football now. The fix is in, folks. Like, job one after this game is DJ Lagway's walking off the field and people are going, wow, you look good. Whether it was real or not, it does not matter. He needs to look good. And so when I say the fix is in, like, all the coaches are, like, they're all Florida coaches. They all want the same thing. Now, one thing working against this, and if there was one coach in the Southeastern Conference that would make a spring game unnecessarily complicated, it's Billy Napier. I told you, Hugh Freeze, praise for Hugh Freeze. He said, no, we got one team. It's like the offense is on that side, defense is on this side. They get 27 points. We'll see if the offense can catch up or pass them. Like, we're not dividing up into teams. Billy Napier not only divides up into teams, he lets, I guess, seniors or captains or whoever draft not only the players, they draft the coaches. They draft the strength and training staff for the next day. They draft the pregame meal. Like he says, I want ownership. It makes it fun. They draft everybody. It sounds like that game I was talking about when EA Sports came out with NFL head coach as a video game, people realize, this ain't fun. I mean, Billy Napier found a way to make a spring game so infinitely complicated and drilled down and detailed that he made that process, which on the surface, hey, we're gonna have a draft, every guy loves a draft, I think he made even that unfun. It's too detailed. There's too much. We just need a game where we can evaluate. But that's my opinion. What's up, Heath?
One thing I'll say, Chuck, talking about the spring games, everybody in the SEC does have the good sense to wrap it up by the 20th. There's only three schools, in fact, that are taking it to the 20th, Mississippi State being one of them, as you mentioned there.
Yeah.
Have you seen when Washington's spring game is?
Are they the first Saturday in May?
They are the Friday of May. Primetime game on May 3rd. I don't think I've ever seen a spring game in May. Like, why would you do that? I have no idea.
A couple of them, the first Saturday of May usually. In fact, I want to say Florida may have done that with Mullen one year. It's an odd choice, and it's just pointless. I mean, for semesters, you're almost out, aren't you?
Semesters, you probably are out. I mean, it's just bizarre. But some of the schools that are taking it to the 27th, again, nobody in the SEC doing it. A few of the more prominent ones in the Big 12. Oregon's probably the most prominent national one of the bunch. But you've got Dion in Colorado. You've got Nebraska and Maryland from the Big 10. So you have some going to the 27th. But Washington, I'll give them credit. They will have exclusive ownership of that weekend for spring game coverage. But I'm not sure that's going to work as well as they'd like. One piece of sports business news today. This had been hinted at for a little bit, but now it is apparently official. Auburn is leaving Under Armour as their athletic provider and headed to Nike on what is apparently going to be a 10-year deal. This will not take effect until after the 24-25 season wraps up for all sports. So if you're an Auburn fan, the good news is you'll have a great chance to get discounts on a lot of Under Armour stuff about a year and a half from now. But, Chuck, to me, the part that's interesting is this means now if you're Under Armour, you are down to one school in the SEC. South Carolina is 1 year behind Auburn on when their deal expires. So you're down to one school in the SEC that uses your stuff, and most of the other schools are locked up. So it's not like you can just go run, grab somebody else here in the next couple of years to make up for it. We have seen Under Armour back away from their deal with UCLA, from Cal. They let Boston College out early. They let Cincinnati out a couple of years early. Like, they have backed away from a lot of schools. I am really curious to see, is this a trend, or did Auburn just say, for our purposes, Nike is just better for us. It's cooler with the kids. The stock options we got from Under Armour didn't pay off very well, so we're just ready for something different. Or is Under Armour just backing away from everybody but Notre Dame? They renewed the deal with Notre Dame, which surprised a lot of people. But if you're South Carolina, you might get a windfall out of this because they don't want to lose their foothold in the SEC. Or if they're just punting, then again, if you're South Carolina now, can you create a bidding war with Nike and Adidas based off of maybe the women's basketball program and just being in the SEC? Like, I'm really curious to see how this goes, because if Under Armour's basically backing out, that really reduces every program that does have an apparel deal coming up's leverage.
Yeah, it's not apples to apples, but, I mean, this may be everything from Sports Illustrated, which is just a shell of a brand, to Monday Night Football, which still exists. Do we... should we just ignore it, too? This may be Texas Instruments. Like, we're the industry leader and cutting edge, and we invented the CD-ROM. And then it's like they're out of business and have been for a while, and we barely noticed. Under Armour is at Russell Athletics. We talked about it. They had a lot of folks, and then they had some folks, and then they had one folk. And then they have anybody. Wraps it up on a Tuesday. Me, David Heath, all y'all, 22 hours. We'll be back talking college football.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.